Adam Hoge is live from Radio Row at Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis. This is Sports Central on WGNRadio.com.
And this is a bonus episode of Sports Central from Radio Row at the Mall of America. It was such a fun, busy week. We had so many good guests, and given our time allotment, didn't even have time to get all the interviews in. So we have some left over and wanted to get them to you in a podcast that you could listen to in the day between our last show on Radio Row and the actual game on Sunday between the Patriots and Eagles. So if you missed any of our interviews this week, please subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, search WGN Sports Central, and you can find the podcast there. We hope you listen to the show that way. If you don't listen to it live, that's why it's the length it is, and we hope you enjoyed it this week. There's so many good interviews from this week. I encourage you to check out, if you missed them, Orlando Pace, John DeFilippo, the Eagles quarterbacks coach earlier this week, who, of course, interviewed for the Bears job. We talked to the Hall of Famer Terrell Davis. Jay Glazer made some news with his comments about John Fox. We also talked to PJ Fleck, Kenny Mayne, and Devin Hester as well on Friday, who was hanging out here on Radio Row. So a lot of good things to go back and listen to if you missed any of it. But we want to get you these interviews that we did not get a chance to play on Sports Central during the week. And we're going to start with Packers tight end JerMichael Finley. And for you Bears fans out there, before you just go, all right, I don't want to listen to a Packers guy. JerMichael Finley suffered 5 concussions during his career, at least diagnosed concussions. He also suffered a spinal cord concussion, which is basically a bruise. And he has, it basically knocked him out of the league and ended his career. And he's been through some dark times, as a lot of these ex-players who are dealing with concussion problems do. And now JerMichael Finley is speaking out on these issues and trying to help other players that are going through similar things. So this is a very important conversation I had with JerMichael Finley. And let's take a listen to it right now. And we started actually by talking about that Packer-Bears rivalry.
Oh, yeah, man. And we used to come down there and roast you guys faithfully.
Yes, you did. I think Bears fans are well used to it now.
Oh, man. But I think they can turn it around and things can happen.
What do you remember from those Bears-Packer games?
I know when we got to Soldier Field, it was a hostile environment. Great field to play on as far as the fans. But the grass, that field is horrible. It is a terrible field. I think they need to do something about that. But, man, being in Chicago is one of my favorite cities as far as going there. The environment there, the energy there, the restaurants there, man, it was awesome. And, you know what I mean, getting prepared for that Sunday game against the Bears is always good.
Yeah, wow. I hear that a lot from players coming into Chicago. They love the road trip.
We love it, man. And, you know what I mean, going into that the team meeting rooms and getting ready for that Chicago game and looking at the history of the many times that robbery happened. It was pretty sweet.
Well, it was fun watching you and your career. Saw you twice a year when you were with the Packers. I'm a big fan of just the rivalry and the respect between the two teams. You're now here with Pure Sports Recovery on Radio Row, and it's well publicized how your career ended. How many concussions did you have?
I had 5 concussions.
And then a spinal cord injury, right?
Yeah, I had a spinal cord concussion also. So I had a bruise on my spinal cord also.
I mean, that had to be pretty scary.
Yeah, it was different, man. It was something that I had to deal with. It was a process getting over, man. And I went into a dark place, man. Like stress, anxiety, impulsiveness, and all of them are things that, you know what I mean, can tilt the guy over. I just wanted to give up. And I went to a place called Pure Sports Recovery, and they helped me out tremendously, man. They rewired my brain, if you want to say reset it, my brain, to slow the hamsters down. And, man, it was a sweet, sweet feeling to get healthy and start to thinking clear, man. It was awesome.
So how does that work? Because you guys provided some notes here, and it says here that your post-career brain testing showed that 44% of your brain was dysfunctional.
Yeah.
I mean, just reading that sounds ridiculously scary.
It was scary. Just imagine 44% of your brain being dysfunctional and trying to go out into the world and try to figure out problems and things, and you got family pulling you, and you trip out. You just go into a place where you don't know how to act and don't know how to, you know what I mean, get over it, man. So I went into a dark place, man, and thank God I got it fixed.
So what exactly does Pure Sports Recovery do to, as you put it, get those hamsters spinning?
Yeah, they give you the neurofeedback. The neurofeedback helps, like I said, slow the hamsters down and help you relax and your brain heal. It's something so sweet. I think more guys should do it.
Do you feel like the NFL is doing enough these days to help you guys out?
Absolutely not. The NFL is a brand that can't be broken, of course, but I think they need to put more effort and more detail in helping guys, especially guys that have retired and, you know what I mean, that laid their life down on the line and the line of duty. I think you should. It should be more sympathy towards that.
I know this is probably a tough question to answer, but, I mean, how much do you think about the future and just how
you don't okay. You talking about during the course of your career?
No, I just mean like your future life.
I think about it often, man. Now I have a purpose in life, man. I feel great. My purpose is helping my fellow teammates, my fellow brothers, the guys that's retiring from the NFL get help, because we all need it. You got hit for I don't care if it's 1 year. Obviously, you had to play football since you were in college. You had to go to college, so the damage that did tells you that every ball player needs to get their brain checked post career.
Former Packers tight end JerMichael Finley here with us on Sports Central on Radio Row. What about the message to the youth?
Yeah,
and just playing football. I mean, I got a 3-year-old son at home. And
wow.
I got to be honest. I love the game of football.
Yeah.
I cover it. It's my job.
Yeah.
I cover the Bears. I don't think I want him playing football.
Yeah, man. It's tough, man, because, you know what I mean, it's one of those things. If you're going to play, you got to play it. You're going to have to go hard at it. But, yeah, I let my 10-year-old play. We play in tackle, too, because one day my kid's going to be a grown man, and I don't want him to be pissed at me saying, Dad, look, you played this game for a long time. Since you was a kid, I wanted to try it out. But now you don't have the tools because you didn't learn when you were 10 years old how to tackle, how to do all these things. So I'm just teaching my kid how to play the game right. I don't even think it's a way to play the game right. It's a violent game.
They're talking about in the state of Illinois right now, where we are, about actually legislating,
yeah,
not allowing kids to play tackle football until,
wow,
they're 12.
Really?
Your thoughts on that?
That
would actually be a law.
I know, that's crazy. I think it's cool. That's awesome. But at the end of the day, man, it's a game you can't hide from. I don't care if you're 12, 8, whatever you are. You can't hide from the game. Whenever you play, you're going to get some kind of trauma just by even, you know what I mean, falling on the ground. Just imagine the whiplash and all that, the things that happen.
I mean, just watching the game every week, it seems like that's where a lot of these happen. Just,
yeah,
getting tackled and you don't have control of your
control.
Head and it just whips back and hits the turf.
And that's the part of the game that you can't control. And I think the game is going to get even violent as the players get bigger, faster, stronger.
Well, let's talk some football, too.
Yeah.
You got to play with Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, sir.
Who, to me, is the most talented quarterback. Just talent.
Absolutely.
I know Tom Brady's the GOAT and everything. But
right.
To me, Aaron Rodgers, who I see play a ton in person and has torched the Bears for years.
Yeah, he did.
And he still does. His ability, it had to be so much fun playing with him.
It was. He made it easy on us. He made it easy for our receiving core to be great. And he was one of them guys that, you know what I mean, he details his work. He's not a, like, really, it's more in the classroom, not really on the field, but he's not a talker. He's about that action.
Did Brian Urlacher ever cover you?
Plenty of times.
You guys overlapped. I'm just thinking, linebacker,
yeah,
tight end.
I used to burn Urlacher 24/7.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be pretty sweet when he gets in the Hall of Fame and you can say, hey, I torched him.
I torched him.
I'll have to go back and watch some of that tape.
Yes, sir. You got to, man. It was pretty sweet.
What was he like as a player? Because in Chicago, that's our big story this week.
Yeah.
Urlacher, first ballot Hall of Famer or not. We all know he's going to get in. He's worthy. It's just a matter of if it's
that's
Saturday not. Or in future years.
Oh, man. It's like you said, Urlacher is awesome, man. On the field, he's a hard-nosed player. He's a downhill player. He don't take no junk. And I loved playing against him. He's a great competitor.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much for having these hard conversations.
Yeah, all good.
You know, it means a lot. Just we're all around the game of football, and it's great seeing former players like you tackle these issues head on.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you. JerMichael Finley, sir. Former Packer tight end. Okay, so there's JerMichael Finley from the Green Bay Packers, ex-Packer tight end, I should say, and had some nice things to say about Brian Urlacher there at the end, who he went up against as a player. And just a very important conversation about head injuries and players in the NFL. And speaking of that, on the same topic, I had a chance to talk to Merrill Hodge, the well-known, he played for the Bears at one point and is kind of more well-known for playing with the Steelers, but was on ESPN for many years. Unfortunately, was a victim of those layoffs that they've had at ESPN. But he was here this week, and all the head injuries he had in his career, he's also speaking out on these types of things. Kind of a different tone. I think you'll find some of these comments that he had, I don't know, I'm going to be honest, a little disturbing. So this is definitely something that's worth listening to. But more, not more importantly, but a big reason why I wanted to talk to him, and we've joked around about this before on WGM, but Merrill Hodge doesn't know how to say his last name. It's spelled H-O-G-E, like mine, Hogue. And he goes by Hodge. So we had some fun with that, just starting off this interview. I've wanted to talk to you for a long time, Merrill Hodge, because we have the same last name, but we pronounce it differently.
Yeah,
and this has been
the
same. We spelled the exact same, H-O-G-E. And I have to say, there's been like a running thing in my family as they've watched you on TV over the years,
right,
both when you were playing and when you're doing analyst stuff. And they're like, man, he doesn't know how to pronounce his name.
Right.
What's wrong with this guy?
So how do you pronounce your name?
It's Hogue.
You do it Hogue. Okay,
yeah.
Listen, I used to be, mortified when they would pronounce it like that. As a kid, I was so, I'd be in the kickoff return. We're playing, I played in Idaho. So if we're over in the Boise Valley, so we're over where Boise State is, all those schools, and we're in the back, and me and another guy are back there, and his name is spelled C-O-I-T-O, okay? Pronounced Cueto.
Okay.
I'm H-O-G-E, pronounced Hodge. Back for the Rams to receive the opening kickoff, Hogue and Codio. We're like, oh my gosh. We're like, what the? Come on, kid. And then I'm like, why? Why are my ancestors leave the D out? Why do that? I mean, if it's going to be Hodge, why not just put the D in there?
So this is getting really deep, and I have no way, no idea
that?
If we're somehow related somewhere down the road. But
that would be interesting, too. Genetic tree?
Well, my understanding is that Hogue or Hodge or whoever, I don't even know how they pronounced it, but they came over back in the 1600s from Scotland. And there's actually a town in Pennsylvania called Hogueville or something like that they settled.
I've been in Pittsburgh all these years. I never heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know where it is in Pennsylvania, but there's some genealogy book we actually have in our family. And, I mean, if they've been around since that long, there's probably some connection somewhere down the line over the last.
We apologize to your listeners for us having to discuss our.
Yeah, but you know what? It's been a running thing.
That's
we don't
awesome.
Have to talk about it the whole time. But
that's funny. I'm going to look into that. It's very curious. I'm very curious now to figure out what is that and why did somebody decide to pronounce it Hodge? And I thought Hodge was more German.
Okay.
And I thought that's how they pronounce. That's kind of what was said to me. Not that is factual. I have no evidence behind that other than that people shared that with me over time. And I'm like, oh, so if you went to Germany, they would get it right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's fascinating to me and my family. So, anyway, it's great to have you on. Who are you working with here today on Radio Row?
Actually, I'm with Your Call Football. And Your Call Football is actually a new football league that we'll start playing. We'll actually play in May 3rd, 10th, and the 17th in Vero Beach, California. I won't say California. Wrong end of the country. Florida.
Okay.
Vero Beach. And we don't have any kickoffs. We don't have any punts. Once we cross the 50, we go for it on fourth down. But the fan calls every play. So, first and 10, they call it. And I give them a bundle of plays. We do that. But I'm also a part of this this ARC helmet technology.
Okay.
When my career ended, I remember I was coming out of intensive care, and they were talking to me about, well, first of all, I said, how did I get this concussion? How did this happen to me with a helmet? And they're like, oh, my gosh, a NASCAR helmet is so much better than a football helmet. And I'm like, really? How could that be? They go, well, NASCAR helmets are meant to absorb impact. Football helmets are meant to withstand impact. So there's going to be a different level of protection. NASCAR, we hope we never use it. Football, you need to use it on every play. Well, this technology actually has, it looks like a real helmet. I mean, it is a real helmet, but I mean, it's not abnormal. I think a lot of people might think, oh boy, I don't want a helmet that big, but it's exactly like any football helmet, but the top of it is soft. Have you felt it?
Yeah, let me see. Oh, yeah, it is soft.
It's soft, yeah. But it also shifts. So it deflects and absorbs the impact. So the more that you can do that, the less impact your body takes, the less impact your brain takes. So this is where we're going with football. I mean, this is why football, one of the reasons it is safer and better now than it has ever been in the history of our game, you know, with these type of technology, with the head trauma protocol. Of all the times that you could play football, especially from a youth perspective, right now should be the most exciting time because of all of these advancements in technology, how we care for the injury if you do have a concussion. So the game should continue to grow and evolve, and that's the message we need to get to families that are confused and scared by a lot of the crooked things that you hear that have really no truth behind them versus the real evidence of where we are with this game, and it's a much better, safer game right now.
Well, where we are in Illinois, there's actually been legislation introduced to prevent kids from even playing tackle football until they're 12.
And that's a shame. You know, let me just give you a perspective here of common sense. We've been playing this game for nearly 100 years, okay? So 90 years of it, we didn't have technology like this, helmets like this. We had absolutely no protocol whatsoever. We did nothing for the injury. We didn't recognize, identify, and care for, which is vital. And we surely didn't give the proper instruction to help how to practice play and the rule changes and the way the game is played today. If you listen to people talk about, well, you play youth football, you play tackle football, you have all these subconcussive hits, you have all these problems, you know, cognitively you got issues later in life, you know, in your 20s, 30s, emotionally you got problems, all these things caused from subconcussive hits. You have 250 million people who have played this game under archaic conditions. Where are they? Where are all these people? You see, I try to get people to stimulate, ask questions, really think outside about, really, I'm going to let somebody who's never, doesn't even know anything about youth football, doesn't know anything about the game, they're under a microscope, and they are looking at stuff, and they come out and go, oh, this could cause it. They could? Yeah, well, I could say we could get hit by lightning. There is a legitimate chance we could all get hit by lightning here. Now, I know it's slim to none, but to say that and then say there's a correlation when you have no correlation, I got millions in there. And then if you subconcussive, shoot, if you jumped on a trampoline, if you ever went to a park and rode a roller coaster, right? If you roughhoused with your buddies and or your brothers or sisters downstairs, run against the couch, if you played in the backyard, if you're in gymnastics and you're flipping off, even though it's sponge, all of these forces and these abrupt shifts they talk about, well, you better stand still and do nothing in life. But there's all of these. For 90 years, nothing was done for it. You're telling me it's more dangerous now than it was then, and you have hundreds of millions of people to pull from, and you can't find anybody? We wouldn't have enough hospitals to house all the people that played youth sports or contact sports in an era where we did nothing for it. Where are they all today? Where's all their problems and deficiencies? It's sad that this message has
You're saying they can't
crooked.
Find people that have those problems.
Well, they say if you do that at the youth level, that you're going to have problems later.
Okay,
in life.
I see what you're saying. So
that's
you're not talking about people that play like in the NFL. You're talking about like just kids who played younger.
Hundreds of millions. 250 million people have played youth football.
Yeah.
Over archaic conditions where there was no head trauma protocol.
Okay.
No equipment like we have today. No instruction like we have today. So you have literally 250 million minimum if you include all the other contact things that are subconcussive. So jumping on a trampoline, I mean, roughhouse with your friends, anything where you have a slight alteration at any time, you fall victim to that. So there's hundreds of millions of people that were in those conditions, and they did nothing for head trauma protocol. If you're going to have all of these deficiencies and issues from doing that as kids, where are they all today? Yeah. Well, if you can't find anybody today, now I'm not saying ignore it, because no, we have made serious advancements, and we should take care of the injury. That was the first thing when my career ended. I was like, we can do better. That's improper care. There's no way that should happen to anybody else. When I found out what happened to me, I was like, no way should that happen. You remove somebody, you care for them properly before they return to play. Now you create a safer environment for our kids so they can enjoy stuff. And what we're doing is we have this fear running around. And if you really ask yourself, does that make sense? What they're saying correlate to real reality, especially if you listen to people's words? Nobody says it does. What do they say? It could. It might. More research. We don't know. We're still. But don't let your kids play football. You are absolutely one of the foulest human beings to draw a conclusion like that when you have zero evidence from it. But if you're a mom or a dad or somebody who has kids, and I have kids.
I do too.
I love my kids.
Yeah.
Okay. They're like, whoa, a doctor just said you shouldn't do that. He has no idea, or she has no idea, about what's really going on in a youth environment for all sports, quite honestly. You have no evidence that playing contact sports at youth does anything to hurt you long term, because you have way too many people to pull from, but yet there's nobody. We wouldn't have enough hospitals to house all the people with the issues. But my point with parents, just think about things a little more. Ask questions. Go, wait a minute. Don't believe, TV lies and highlights really lie. So don't let the TV tell you what's going on. And if somebody is telling you, could, might, but don't let your kid play football, well, listen to the first few words. Could, might. What does that mean? You know, where are they getting these samples from?
Let me ask you this. How do you get this helmet here into the college and pro level?
Well, this is a matter of adopting the technology, and this could go to any helmet. You know, any helmet could be. This is part of a technology.
And our listeners can't see it, but there's literally like a soft layer on top of a regular helmet.
It looks just like a very modern NFL helmet. There's nothing abnormal. If you remember Kelso, the Buffalo Bills safety, he had that big oversized shell on his helmet years back.
Okay.
And most people, they felt like it helped absorb a little better. Well, that was kind of a soft shell, but nobody wanted to wear it because it looked so odd. Well, they've taken all of the cosmetic oddness out of it. There's the softness aspect of it, but there's the shifting. So you have less of that blow because it's being absorbed with the movement and the absorption of this outer shell. The technology can only help our helmets get better. And our helmets are so much better now than when I played. I mean, when I played, some guys still had straps in their helmet. Yeah. That was their protection. When you think about it, you're like, seriously? Like, okay, somebody played 40 years with straps, and they're 70 and 80 today, and they're doing just fine. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's hundreds of millions of those people that played like that now. Really? So all of that doesn't mean we don't make the game safe, we don't evolve. That's what we are doing. But we're also creating a perspective. Parents, don't rob your kids of something that could help them with their life's work. When you relationships, work, accountability, responsibility, all of the amazing things that sports teaches you to help you. If they really want to play, ask questions. Find out what's going on so you can make a good decision for your family. Don't listen to somebody on TV who has no idea about the whole concept of things, and they just got done saying, Mike, could, should, but don't let your kids play football. Don't buy into that. Ask questions, look into it, and you will feel safer and better about the atmosphere of football and sports in general.
All right, Merrill Hodge with Adam Hogue. It's great to finally have this
good
interview.
Good to see you, Hogue. I love it, brother.
<All right.
laughs> Good to meet you, buddy.
Okay, so I've always wanted to ask Merrill Hodge why he pronounces his name wrong, and that was a fun conversation to have. Kind of surrounding a much bigger issue, and you heard, whereas JerMichael Finley was more talking about ex-NFL players, Merrill Hodge and I got into more of a discussion about youth football and this helmet that he was carrying around that's actually padded on the outside. And you can tell that he really believes that kids should still be playing tackle football. And look, I didn't want to sit here and fight with him on the issue. Obviously, what he had to say was he felt pretty strongly about it. But for him to say that there's no evidence whatsoever that playing football at a young age has an effect on you later in life, I think that's a stretch. And I don't think that's a controversial thing for me to say. If he's expecting people who only played as children and didn't grow up to be in the NFL or play college football, but only played younger and maybe suffered concussions when they were younger. And if he's expecting those guys to then show up as adults later in life and speak out on that, I don't know that you're going to find those people. So his claim that there's no evidence, I don't know that that's accurate. I don't think anyone's debating that if you go on and you play high school football and college football and in the NFL, you're obviously going to suffer more concussions and more severe ones because everyone's bigger, stronger, faster, and you're playing more football. Obviously, that's the case. But I don't know. My stance is I'm in favor of waiting until kids are at least 12 before they play tackle football. And you can even wait to high school. I think, you know, we talked to Tommy Harris last year on WGN, and that was his – he was saying that he doesn't want his kids to play until high school, at least tackle football. You can still play flag and things like that. And it's a hot debate, and I understand it. But I'm not sure that Merrill Hodge was completely fair to the issue with some of the things he had to say about kids playing tackle football. All right, we move on, though. We interviewed a number of longtime older players, legends in the NFL, Orlando Pace, Terrell Davis, a couple of Hall of Famers this week. But Herman Moore, the ex-Lions wide receiver, who Bears fans will remember from the 90s because he was terrorizing them a little bit. We had a fun conversation, just what it was like to play in the 90s, Lions, Bears, playing at Soldier Field. And this conversation just started with, you know, him picking on the Bears a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had some great rivalries and had an opportunity to play against some pretty good defensive players and just some excitement. But, you know, mainly I was a big fan of Barry Sanders, so I enjoyed watching him run. And he had some pretty spectacular runs against the Bears. So, unfortunately for the Bears fans, I'm sorry to bring that up.
Oh, he's a good guy. I remember those well. And I actually wanted to ask you about Barry and just what it was like playing with him because – man, for us fans, it was just a pleasure to watch him every single week.
It was awesome because he was just a tremendous player. He had a lot of athletic ability, but just his leadership on the field meant a lot to us as players. And Barry was one of those consummate professionals that always did the right thing, said the right things, carried himself the right way, both on and off the field. And from there, you just admired his athleticism and just what he meant to the game itself.
Obviously, his retirement caught a lot of people off guard. What was it like being a teammate of his at that time, and how caught off guard were you?
Well, a lot of us had some inkling the previous season that he may be hanging it up, only because we knew that he was kind of getting down to the end and he was looking for that championship. And I don't know if he necessarily felt at the time that he could get it with Detroit based on the direction that we were going and some of the changes that we had made. But it caught, I think, the fans off guard a little bit more so than most of the players. And unfortunately, we had to go into the preseason without him. And it was short term, and we had to find some guys. And it's hard to replace someone like Barry Sanders, as you can imagine. But it was a great career. I played with him for 8 tremendous years and was honored to be able to have him and say he was a teammate.
We just had another Hall of Fame running back, Terrell Davis, on the show. Another guy, shorter career, but a great career.
Right.
How much appreciation did you have just for that position and what those guys went through and put their bodies through every week?
Well, I always say the offensive and defensive linemen I have a lot of respect for because they have no opportunity to shy away from contact. Mm-hmm. They're always going to be in the trenches. And then you go to your running backs who have to go into that interior line or hit the outsides, and there's no way to avoid contact. So even when you look at Terrell Davis, one of those bigger running backs and had the speed, and I'm just amazed that they're able to keep themselves in the shape that they're in after their careers because of the amount of contact that they have. So there's a great appreciation for all the work that's put in between those two units.
Herman Moore here, courtesy of Quick Lane Tire and Auto. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing with them this week.
Well, I'm happy to be here on behalf of Quick Lane Tire and Auto Center. They have, I don't know if you're familiar with them, over 800 locations across the country. They do a lot of routine maintenance and repair on a lot of vehicles, all make and models. But with them, I'm proud to be a part of their Ready to Serve program. It's one where it's trading one uniform for another, going into its third year. of providing opportunities for our military vets, helping them with $10,000 scholarships in their transition from coming from their military lifestyle into the civilian lifestyle. And that's sometimes tough, and it comes with some challenges, so they're able to go out and help make that a little bit easier by providing that program.
That's a great cause and a great thing that's definitely needed, so appreciate you doing that with Quicklane. You know, we see the Lions twice a year in Chicago. What do you think about the direction they're going in now with Matt Patricia?
With Matt Patricia, you know, you're bringing a defensive-minded guy in. Right now, the heart and soul of a lot of these championship teams is not just the offensive side. You have to have a competent defensive unit, and the Lions have had some very good players. They've had Tara Austin, defensive coordinator, who I thought did a tremendous job with the Lions. Mm-hmm. But you bring in a guy who's going to want to bring a different type of spin, a different element, a different mindset. With that, I think it complements their offense. They have a high-powered offense. And when you talk about facing the Lions and the fact that they're always seeming to be hanging around, it's all about getting into the playoffs. It's when will they hit that next level? And it's not just getting into the playoffs. It's winning playoff games and then ultimately championship games.
Give me a good memory from playing in Chicago. Any cold games at Soldier Field?
Wow.
Did they still have that awful AstroTurf when you played there?
No, thank God they don't.
Okay.
Because I can't even tell you how much skin I've lost on the AstroTurf, because you could just do stretches on that field.
Well, you played your home games on that stuff, didn't you?
We practiced on it. And it was, so we'd rather play outside and practice outside rather than going inside the dome and actually playing and practicing in the warmth of the turf at the Silver Dome. But, you know, one of my best memories is two. One was my rookie season. And I'd been struggling to get on the field, and Robert Clark got hurt in my rookie year, and I ended up taking over for him that game, and that's ultimately when I started the rest of the season, which kind of got my career kick-started and was in Chicago. But another one was Don Majkowski came in for, I forget which quarterback, because I played with 20 of them that was injured. And he came in, we came from behind, I think a touchdown or two, and ended up winning and caught the game-winning touchdown. So from a personal standpoint, those were probably my two fondest memories playing out there.
Very cool. Where does Chicago rank in terms of road trips? I guess it was the NFC Central when you played, right. Is that one you look forward to every year?
Every year, because they travel well, both to our stadium, and they also definitely had a disdain for us when we came there. Mm-hmm. And they love Barry. You know, everybody, they cheer for Barry, whether even though he's an opponent, but they booed the rest of us. So I enjoyed just the rivalry. I enjoyed the fact that the fan base was loyal and it traveled well, both and in ours as well. So it was it made it a challenging and competitive atmosphere when you went to play. So it was never a dull game, no matter what the both teams' records are, whether we were both going for playoff pushes or whether we were pretty much out of it. It always turned out to be a pretty exciting game.
All right. Well, the Bears-Packer rivalry obviously is number one, but Bears-Lions as well, anything within the NFC North, and it was fun talking to Herman Moore about some of those battles against the Bears back in the 90s, and he had a long, healthy NFL career, one of the very good players to play the game, not a Hall of Famer, but a very good player that I'm sure a lot of Bears fans remember. Okay, moving on, another ex-player who you might not know as well, but he's a former linebacker, Ben Lieber, and he played up here in Minnesota. He now works in the media up here in Minnesota. He is the Vikings sideline reporter, works for KFAN here, and is a really good analyst, also does some college football stuff with Fox. And I got him on earlier in the week just to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Vikings and hosting the Super Bowl here up in Minnesota, considering the Vikings loss. And he also had some very interesting things to say about Mitch Trubisky in this conversation, as he's an ex-player who can analyze and kind of like Mitch Trubisky. So here's that conversation with Ben Lieber. Just starting with how tough of a week this is for the locals up here, having to host the Eagles, who just beat them a couple weeks ago in the NFC Championship game.
To say the least, yeah. I tell you what, it's been probably the most deflated that I've seen this city in the 11 years that I've been here. And I was a part of the 2009 season in which we lost to the Saints. And I think this one, for whatever reason, hurts a little bit more for these guys.
Well, it's certainly, I had Paul Allen on the show yesterday, and he's as emotional as anybody.
That's an experience, isn't it?
Yeah, and I loved how he's like, I'm getting out of town, I'm going to Vegas, which I know he's been talking about a lot up here. I guess I don't blame him. He's a very emotional guy, and that was but you guys had the high against the Saints, and then the low the next week against the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't think that you could rise as high as they did after that miraculous catch and run, and then fall as far as they did. I mean, I certainly have never seen a play like that with Stephon Diggs ever in the history of the NFL. So you can say that was historic levels of excitement and emotion, I think, for everybody. And then to come crashing down, in which, you know, everybody just, you know, you kick yourself for overlooking the Eagles. And you thought, oh, well, it's Nick Foles, and you know, we're riding this wave, and, you know, nothing can stop us now sort of mentality. And to get completely throttled and get punched in the face and not recover was hard for the fan base.
PA and I were talking yesterday just about the intensity level on defense. I love watching that Vikings defense. I covered the Bears in Chicago, so yeah. I saw them up close twice this year. And Mike Zimmer's done such a tremendous job. Were they just tired? I mean, how else do you explain it?
No, I don't think they were tired. I tell you what, it was... I think Doug Peterson put together a really good game plan, a really creative game plan. And I've talked to some guys with the Eagles, and they said, you know, listen, that was about as clean a game as we played all season long. So it was a perfect meeting of, I think, they caught the Vikings on a little bit of an emotional lull. It was hard to maybe bounce back from that emotional win and go on the road and play in a hostile environment. And then you had a team like the Eagles that they admit themselves, hey, that was the cleanest game we'd played all season. You know, our receivers were on point. They blocked their butts off. They did a really good job on the outside. And Nick played, you know, better than anybody had seen him play in his career. So, you know, when you factor those things in, and the fact that their front four did exactly what their front four has done defensively all season long, it was just too hard to recover in that place.
You're doing some stuff with Best Buy here today. We got Nate Bauer. So you're like the expert Geek Squad guy on technology for Super Bowl week. That's what I'm being told.
That's it. I'm the top geek with Geek Squad, and okay. You know, this is all fascinating for me. I'm mentoring Ben to potentially take my job someday. So we talk about, you know,
that's not going to happen.
Well, it might. So yeah, we you know, we're here. This is, again, from a technology perspective. Seeing all this, it's pretty great. And you know, Best Buy's got the Tech Zone in the Mall of America here. We're talking about how you can get the most from your technology and 4K TVs. And you know, I'm a huge fan of the game, right? And like the fans back in Chicago want to be at the game, want to go. I hope my team makes it someday. But until then, I'll be able to watch on this great 4K TV with some amazing sound, some amazing light. And you know, that the technology, and Ben, you and I have talked quite a bit about this. When you look at these TVs, you can't tell if it's a video game or if it's real life.
Let me ask you this question, because a couple years ago, I was in the market for a new TV. I think I drove my wife completely crazy because I was looking at so many different ones. Is there really a difference? So is there really a difference between the brands? And I guess I'm talking more about 4K, because it was the first 4K TV I bought, and I was so paranoid that I was getting the most for my money.
Yeah, so the 4K technology, it's evolved quite a bit. 4K, when you look at like a standard HD TV, it's got four times the pixels. So what does that mean? Each of the pixels, right, it feels like you're at the game. The technology between all of the TVs, you know, the 4K technology still exists within all of them. The best thing for it to do is like look at TVs. You don't really need to go much further than that and say, what picture do I like the best? You know, and then the most important piece is making sure you're getting the 4K content. The game's not going to be in 4K, but there's plenty of other ways to get 4K content to bring that true picture to life. And of course, we got some great deals this week, believe it or not. We got a 55-inch Samsung for $499. 4K TVs started as low as $279 and up, and then you get soundbar for $149. I'm not going to just keep rattling off prices. Just, you know, if you have any questions, head to your local Best Buy store. I'd be happy to help.
Well, they let me carry that on my flight home, or I guess I might as well just buy it in Chicago then.
You know what's funny is their technology has progressed where we've got OLED TVs that roll up. So someday you will be able to take your TV and put it in the overhead compartment. Yeah, yeah. Head to your local Best Buy store, Ben, and pick one up.
They physically roll up?
At CES.
Like a yoga mat.
Yes. Yep, yep.
That's insane.
You have to probably bring your own strap to hold it tight. but yeah, it's fascinating, you know, and being in this game for a long time, technology game that is, it's pretty neat to see how fast technology is evolving.
Ben Lieber, the former Vikings and Chargers linebacker. Now, you're with the Vikings pretty pretty much every week, right, during the season?
Yeah, I'm the radio sideline analyst.
Okay. And you're doing some stuff with Fox, too, on college football?
Correct, yeah. So Saturdays I work with Fox broadcasting Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12 college football games.
So I do sidelines for Northwestern on okay. WGN Radio, so very familiar. And it's a lot of fun, first of all.
Just absolutely. I mean, it's such a difference in game, right? I mean, you know, it's I'm fortunate that I get the college experience on the weekend on a Saturday, mm-hmm. and then I go and meet wherever the Vikings are and do the NFL game, and it's such a contrast with the environment. I mean, you got to love the pageantry of college football.
Oh, I can't get away from it. That's why I have so much fun Saturdays on the sidelines, and then kind of the opposite situation. I'm in the press box then on Sundays, probably the opposite for you. But I want to ask you just your perspective watching Mitchell Trubisky this year, the two times you got to see him in person, just what you thought.
You know what? I like the fact that, listen, this game is turning into more of a college game where you want athletic quarterbacks and guys that can move around. I think he checks all those boxes. Mm-hmm. The throws that I thought that he was the most crisp on were like the little ride play action plays where he'd hit that first slant by like the slot receiver or the tight end. When he knows where he's going to go with the ball, he's great. He's accurate. It gets there on time. Gets there snappy. He looks like he's an NFL quarterback. I think when he has to stop and things are covered, the first and second read, that's where things tend to break down. And I think that's where he needs to get better. It's, yes, you are athletic and you can extend plays, but extend the plays to where you can allow your receivers to get open and not just run with the football and just you know, tuck it and run sort of thing. So he's going to develop, I think, into a more, not just a half-field quarterback, but more into a full-field quarterback. But he was good. I mean, on all the bootlegs and half-field reads against the Vikings, he did a really good job. And I think there's a lot to like about him, but he was inexperienced coming out of college. It's going to take a few years to get that experience at the pro game.
So some nice things for Ben Lieber there about Mitch Trubisky at the end. You know, most people I've talked to this week have very positive things about what they saw from Mitch this season and feel like he just needs some help. You know, when we talked to Devin Hester this week, he had similar things to say. Just got to get him some wide receivers and some offensive line help. I think the coaching benefits should be there with Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich, and it should be exciting to see where Mitch Trubisky goes from here. By the way, Mitch was here, I was told, on Friday. Didn't see him around Radio Row, and apparently he didn't do any interviews, but he was just up here for some events. That kind of disappointed me a little bit, because if you think about it, Patrick Mahomes has been up here. Deshaun Watson has been up here. They've been doing a ton of interviews. They've been all over the NFL Network and ESPN. The Bears were not really well represented up here this week. Jordan Howard was here. But, you know, Mitch Trubisky is the star of the team right now and really the face of the team. And I would have thought that it would have been a good idea to get him, you know, in front of some cameras this week and doing some radio and promote that. So I don't know whose decision that was. Usually the team doesn't have much control over what players do in the offseason. And if you heard our interviews this week, pretty much everyone's working with some company that they're promoting. And so it's probably a Mitch decision. But I don't know. It puzzled me a little bit why Mitch Trubisky didn't do more media here if he bothered to come up here for the Super Bowl. All right, our last interview that we're going to get to here in our bonus episode of Sports Central from Radio Row in just a long but really, really fun week. This is actually one of my favorite interviews I did all week. It's Hannah Teeter. It's a former Olympic gold medalist, snowboarder. She's still snowboarding, trying to get into the Olympics this year. She didn't, I'll let her tell you about it. She that was one of the first things I asked her, if she still has a chance to make it to South Korea later this month.
I mean, I'm first alternate right now for Korea, so I've been to three Olympics, but this time I missed it by one spot, so I'm first alternate, which isn't the best position to be in, but it was close. I mean, I'm still competing a lot and doing pretty good.
Okay, so you still have a shot. You still have a shot. Well, you do have a gold medal.
True.
Which they can't ever take away from you back in 2006. Right. But you're here with Special Olympics, and we have Alex Steffel here.
Yes.
Yep. A Special Olympian from here in Minnesota, correct?
Correct.
Now, what are you competing?
I'll compete in USA Games in Seattle this year.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Special Olympics, Hannah.
Yeah, so I'm a global ambassador for Special Olympics, and I started working with them about 6 years ago at the World Winter Games in South Korea. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Kwan was there, Apollo Ohno, and they were global ambassadors, so I just felt honored that when they asked me to be one, it was like a dream come true, because I'm joining a team of elite athletes who are helping to spread the knowledge and the movement of changing the world and, making the global inclusion movement happen more rapidly with Special Olympics, and that's our whole goal, is to get all these athletes involved in sports that they never would have had a chance to be involved in. And they're just Special Olympics is changing the game, changing lives every day.
Now, you guys are calling this the Inclusion Revolution, correct? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this year we're celebrating 50 years of Special Olympics, and we just look forward to the next 50 years of getting even more athletes involved in sports. And it is the global, Inclusion Revolution is what we're calling it, because these kids and adults are on the sidelines, and now they're being included and showing all their talent and skill and all the passion, and they give you way more than you give them when you hang out with these athletes. They're just so inspiring.
Alex, what has the Special Olympics meant to you?
Oh, it means a lot to me. Meeting new people and competing and gold medals and everything means a lot to me.
You guys are celebrating the 50th anniversary in Chicago this summer.
Right.
So we should be on this thing.
Yeah, you guys should be there.
Yeah. It's July 17th through the 21st. I don't have all the details yet. We still have 6 months to kind of figure it out.
Yeah,
but
put it in the schedule.
Yeah, I believe the new Eternal Flame of Hope will be lit up on July 20th in Chicago. So, hey, there's no better place in Chicago in the summer. I can tell you that.
It's beautiful. I love it there.
So it should be a lot of fun. Well, this time of year has to be pretty cool for you. I mean, I hope you make it to Korea. But
thank you.
Just tell me a little bit about your past experience with the Winter Olympics. I get really excited about it every time. I'm your typical, I don't pay attention to these sports for 4 years, but then when the Olympics come around, I am, glued to it for 2 straight weeks.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've been to 3 Olympics, and I'd say the best part about going is representing your country and having the honor to do that. It makes you try harder, and you really want to bring home a medal, not obviously just for yourself, but for your country, your family, and friends all cheering you on. And it's just been an experience, I mean, I hope I get to go to Korea to do it again. But if not, I'm predicting the girls to sweep it, because America has, some of the best half-pipe riders in the world.
Well, you guys have done really well
on
the half-pipe.
Now, we always do well.
When did snowboarding, I'm trying to think back, was it 2006 or was it 2002 when it first started to...
I think Nagano was the first.
Okay.
So that was, it went Nagano, Salt Lake, to Reno.
Okay. But it's definitely exploded.
It has. And, X Games helped with that.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't really in the Olympics until people saw how big it was and, how popular it was at X Games. So then they were like, oh, I guess we got to add it. So they added it, and now they just added Big Air. So that's going to be cool to watch in Korea. It'll be the first time.
Now, that's the one where you guys shoot off the big jump and do
crazy. Oh, crazy.
Do you do that one?
I used to do it.
Okay.
It's it hurts a lot more to fall off, a 100-foot kicker.
I bet.
So I kind of just stick in the half pipe, but I'm really excited to watch that.
No, I'm a terrible snowboarder.
Oh, okay.
I ski for the most part, but I tried to snowboard one time and it just did not go well.
Well, the first few times are a little bit hard.
That's what they said. It's just got to keep doing.
You got to get over that hump, and then once you're over it, it's so fun. Like, my parents snowboard. They switched over from skiing because my mom, her knees hurt, and she switched over and she's like, oh my God, it's the best. So if my parents can do it, you can.
Well, you grew up in a snowboarding family, correct, in Vermont?
Well, we started snowboarding, kids.
Got it.
And my parents were like, oh, they look like they're having such a great time. So they switched over, and we all do it now.
Okay. Well, I get inspired by these Olympic sports. I just started curling. I'm not even kidding. So I stick to that because I can't fall as much. I know, you're laughing at me.
Oh, my God.
It's fine. I just can't do the snowboarding.
Can do the curling.
You're not wrong.
They're the only ones who are allowed to drink. Every athlete is not allowed to have any booze in their system, but curlers, they can just go crazy.
Like during the Olympics or just in general?
No, in the Olympics.
So the curlers are allowed to drink in the Olympics. See, that's why I started curling.
That's what I thought.
Because, you know, and you can do it till you're like, I could be like 50 in the Olympics. Maybe someday I'll make it.
All those guys are all a little bit older.
Well, Hannah, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Alex, yep. Thank you for being here. A great cause with the Special Olympics.
Right, yep. And if anybody wants to learn more about the Chicago event coming up or just Special Olympics in general, SpecialOlympics.org is a great place to check us out.
Okay, so Hannah Teeter there promoting Special Olympics. It was great to talk to her. Special Olympics, great organization, and it was great to have a Special Olympian there with her as well sit down with us here on Radio Row. And she ripped me a little bit for curling, which Joe Romano, our producer's here. I don't even think we've talked about this yet, Joe. But yeah, I started curling. And Hannah Teeter, the Olympic gold medalist, just made fun of me for it.
Adam, you know, I thought I couldn't be any more jealous of you being up there for Super Bowl week. But now to hear that you're curling, I mean, maybe the best Olympic sport, summer or winter. I mean, name a better one. Come on, try it.
I can't. Curling's the best one. But, you know, she said she was making fun of it because all those guys just drink and, you know, exactly.
That was a negative? I
can win an Olympic gold medal while drinking?
You got the broom in one hand and the beer in the other? I think that sounds like a quality sport.
Right. What's wrong with that? By the way, the park at Wrigley next week, actually I think the next 2 weeks, they're going to have curling outside Wrigley Field, and I'm supposed to help out on Tuesday. I don't really know all the details. I'll share them with you during Monday's episode of Sports Central once I have them. But Tuesday at the park at Wrigley, they're having a curling exhibition. They're doing some lessons, and I'm supposed to be there helping out in advance of the Olympics. So you can come out and try curling if you've ever seen it on TV and want to do it. That's through the Chicago Curling Club up in Northbrook. And I'm telling you, it's a lot of fun. This is not a joke that I've actually started curling. You heard it there in the Hannah Teeter interview. So you can come out and do that. Well, this has really been a really fun week up here. I mentioned all in Friday's episode all the endless people to thank, but that includes you, Joe Romano, for working so hard and even putting together this bonus podcast as well to bring you all the leftover interviews we had that just didn't fit in, and none of those were on purpose. It's just, you know, we only had an hour every single day, and sometimes things didn't get fit in, and we talked about it and said, well, we got to put out a podcast on Saturday, too, to make sure we push everything out. So we got to get out of here. It's been a fun week. Of course, got the game Sunday, and I can't wait. I think it's going to be a really good, fun game, and of course, Justin Timberlake's doing the halftime show. I hope Chris Stapleton shows up, because Chris Stapleton is awesome, and if it's JT and Chris Stapleton in a good football game, I don't know how you have a better Super Bowl Sunday. And maybe someday soon the Bears will be playing in a Super Bowl. We'll see. At least they're on the right track, I think.
Would you rather have Stapleton or NSYNC?
Stapleton. Because JT is NSYNC. Like, he's the best part of NSYNC. So he's there anyway. So then you go JT Stapleton. I'm thinking that's what's going to happen. I hope I'm right. We'll recap it all on Monday's show. Back in Chicago, I'll be there. We'll recap the halftime show on top of the football game. I'm not going to see any of the commercials because I'm at the game, but I'm sure we'll have some of that too as well. The fans are into it. It's been a fun week. We'll talk to you on Monday back in Chicago as Sports Central rolls on.